This is the Empower Podcast. Released January 29th, 2023. Episode 617. Conference Room Innovation.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Australians, all let us rejoice, for we are one and free.
Oh, man. You know this. You know what that means? I get a pass to sing the U.S. national anthem.
Oh, totally.
On July 4th.
Totally.
Yep.
Yeah, right. Yep. Yeah, it's Australia Day here. Australia Day.
Hey, happy Australia Day.
Thank you very much. Here I am in the office. I'm the only one in the building.
I know.
How sad is that?
Take advantage of national holidays and take a day off. You know, your boss is just cracking the whip behind you, I guess, you know?
But I just got back from like taking a couple of weeks off. Like it feels right. like that Australia Day is like an awkward holiday for me because because I just get back from our big yearly trip, walkabout. And, he's a bloody public holiday, you know?
Well,
they're thinking about changing it. So, they've changed the date like three times in the past. So, they want to change it again and, that's all the talk.
That's a sign that the day is not tied to the date. I don't think they'd ever be able to change July 4th because it's like people would go bananas about it.
Oh, right. Okay.
I think probably because of the Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum movie. And Bill Paxton.
Oh, right. Right. I cannot count how many times I've rewatched that. It's just,
You watch a lot of stinkers.
I do watch a lot of stinkers.
Overall. Yep. And that one is, it's definitely
you're not
going to
call it a stinker.
I would never call it a stinker. No. It's a timepiece.
Yes.
It's like a little out of date, but also like super fun still.
Totally. That's why it's got that rewatchability. You know, like if you're just flicking through and you go Independence Day's, like you just stop.
Yeah, you're
right?
definitely
like,
stopping.
Done. Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Choice made.
That Shawshank.
I've
Top
never
Gun.
Seen Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, it's quite good.
Yeah, no, I've never seen it.
Highly recommended. Highly recommended.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yep.
Yeah, if I could do a Morgan Freeman voice, I would be doing that right now.
No, right. Okay. Yep.
I shan't try that.
Yeah, but it's not exactly an action adventure, is it?
No, it is. It is actually.
Oh,
I mean,
it is?
Not like action,
right,
but it's
No.
Yeah, no, it's very, very. I mean, it won an Academy Award and also.
Oh, yeah.
It's just amazing story. So.
Yep. Totally aware of
highly
it.
Highly recommend it.
Haven't seen it. Yeah, there you go.
Add it to the list. Next time you're like, hey, maybe I should watch Independence Day for the 50th time or crappy movie about Mars, like the stuff you post about on Twitter.
Yep.
Take a shot. You might enjoy it.
All right. What ticks me off these days is that you try, like I'm subscribed to like half a dozen bloody streaming services and like you go, oh, I've got to hank it in to watch this movie. So you search for it on your Fire Stick, which searches all the different platforms and it's not on any of them.
Do you do VPNing? Because that I feel like if we were like sponsored at this point, we'd be like NordVPN, or whatever they always
latest,
do that.
It's
you can
like
VPN
it's
in different regions.
Yeah, but it's not not like a location thing. It's just like that streaming. So like it's not on any of the streaming services anymore because they all are going for their own exclusive content and like back in the day, right, if you had the only streaming service was Netflix and maybe Hulu or something, maybe I don't know, but but like everything was on Netflix back then. It was like, oh yeah, if you want to stream movie, it's on there, but now it's not.
We should take this opportunity to announce we're starting the Amp Hour Plus, which is a new streaming service for Amp Hour. Oh. You can listen to it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and the cost is nothing. So sign up to the Amp Hour Plus.
we're a year behind here because like at least a year ago, I tweeted out that there was the new EEV Blog Plus service.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And it was for only $5 a month. You can get all my existing free content for free. All my existing free content for $5 a month.
Any takers?
No, but I did lose quite a few followers over it, and people were, people just were outraged, just, and they didn't quite get it.
Interneting.
Yep. They were Twittering. So
yes.
Yep.
They were all on Twitter.
Well, you told me you let it leak. You are secretly reading Twitter at least.
Oh, come on, man. Why you gotta blow up my spot? No, I go on there and I check. I'm just checking to see if there's anything critical,
Right, nothing. To see if it's blowing up yet.
Yeah, that too.
Right.
Okay. No, really just to see if anyone's trying to reach me. That's
okay, right. Yeah, fair enough.
Still there. I'm just not responding in there. If you want to reach me directly, check out Mastodon. If not, email's fine.
Mastodon.
You can find lots of places to find me online.
I remember
Twitter.
Mastodon when I was a boy.
Yeah.
Jeez, it went the way of the dodo.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Dude, you're so uncool.
Oh, you have no idea.
Bloody Mastodon.
I was actually thinking about that, being a dad now, I get to lean into it, though. And it's pretty great. I mean, I've never been cool, but now I get to really...
Right.
Tell bad jokes and everybody just kind of rolls their eyes, but less than before. And they're
totally.
He's just a dad. Yeah. It's just a dad joke. It's great.
I know. Yep. terrific. All right. Well, what content do we actually have on today's show?
Well, I didn't actually tell you this before the show, but today I got a solar quote on my house, and it was shockingly high in the US.
How much is shockingly high?
Well, it was $28,000, Dave.
Yankee bucks.
Yankee bucks. And here's the real kicker. It was only half of my usage.
For what size?
That would be a 7 kilowatt. But that included a Elon Special, a Powerwall battery. So that's the...
Well, there's most of the cost. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's currently...
16 grand of that, actually. Yeah, I was surprised 16, by that.
The battery's now 16 grand US, is it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
And that's for 13.5 kilowatt hours.
Yep.
This company I talked to, they're fantastic. They were really, they gave me great explanations and, it was just great walkthrough. They updated it because the reason I had gotten a quote in the past, my neighbor unfortunately had to take down this really huge tree next to me. And it basically just opened up one side of my roof.
Oh, I was going to ask because I've seen your roof and the trees around it.
Shaded.
And it's Right, so that's changed now.
It was like a 100-foot maple. It was really, really big. It was so cool to watch it getting cut. It was sad that it had to get cut down.
Right.
But this thing was a robotic arm that the guy down on the ground was driving the robot, and then it had a chainsaw attached to the robot arm, and it just grabs the arm, grabs the branch, saws through it, and then it brings it back down. So much fun to watch.
Reminds me of an old Thunderbirds episode, the crab logger. Oh, yeah. That was one of my favorite episodes. You've seen it?
No, I've heard of Thunderbirds.
Thunderbirds, crab logger. I'll see if I can get a photo up here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, the crab logger. One of my favorite episodes. Anyway.
Yeah. 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 So unfortunately, in the U.S., so there is a tax credit that helps a little bit because that's actually not the full cost. That's actually after a 30% rebate, which is
Nice. Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah,
I didn't think you had enough roof space because your house is kind of weird and angular and all sorts.
It's
got lots of little bits.
I shan't be sharing it with the broader audience here, but it is a weird shape. The roof is not optimal for it. Some of it's south facing, so I knew it was a long shot, but it's unfortunately not super efficient for this sort of. So probably not doing it, but
how many hours per day? Would you get? So the tree's gone, so you get sun, but do other trees shaded or is there a,
It would be okay. It would be okay in terms of sun, but it's actually the majority of the biggest part of the roof is facing almost due east, which is not optimal. So you get pretty much 2/3 of the day and not in an optimal way. But then some of the roof has some other cover. There's some other parts that has more southern facing.
Well, I'm my old system is on the exact opposite side of the roof that you want it on, right? And it's still doing pretty well. Yeah, that's my existing.
What is your latitude there?
3 kilowatts. I don't know.
Wondering how low does the sun get in the sky? In the winter, do you still get pretty good coverage?
Yeah, it's 30 degrees or something.
Okay.
You know, like it gets up like 30 degrees in the sky or something. Yeah, I guess I 35, I don't know, 40 maybe. Let's see. In winter.
Sydney latitude. So you guys are at, 33.86 yep. south. And Durham latitude, if I can spell latitude right, is 35.99. So I'm a little bit higher up.
Right. So you'd be equivalent to probably Melbourne here, perhaps. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
The southern tip. You're not quite Tasmania.
No, not that far.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, but I mean, and that's better. They'll install it a lot of places too. I had a friend who was selling in Chicago, selling solar systems, and that's much further north from here. So.
So you're telling me that solar companies will sell you solar whether or not you need it.
Yeah, whether or not it's a good idea.
I'm shocked.
I know. It's pretty crazy, right? I think they get decent stuff too. It looks like Canberra. I'm pretty much equivalent with Canberra.
Right. Got it. Yeah. Well, you guys are home. I mean, you're basically working from home, right? So you use lots of power during the day. So, you can make a good argument for just going for a solar system with...
Just solar by itself.
Solar by itself without the battery. And that saves a huge amount of cost. And then you're offsetting. Mm-hmm. You could offset probably half of your energy usage.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Just with a cheap, just get the cheapest panels you can and, the cheapest inverter and,
Yeah, I think that's the other thing too. I think these are pretty high-end panels and stuff like that too.
Yeah, right.
So I think these are SolarCity/Tesla. So,
Right.
Well, I don't know if those are high quality or not, but.
I've done videos about the Tesla panels catching on fire. So.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll get another quote.
They're kind of famous for it. They half the Walmarts in the US burnt down because they had Tesla. Well, I'm exaggerating. No, but I think it was Walmarts. They had, or was it Kmart or something? They had Tesla. They did a deal with Tesla and they had solar panels on their roof and three installations caught fire or something.
Oh boy.
So okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Good look into that. Yeah. This is the first step back into it now that the tree's gone. So.
Right. Okay. Cool. Excellent.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Mm.
It is not as straightforward as I thought it would be. I think there are more options than I guess I thought it would. I thought it would just be pick a installer and they just do it. But like you said,
it kind of is.
There's
that
research
easy.
To be done. And,
I mean,
it could be, but I probably will not treat it that way.
Right. No, of course not, because you're an engineer. Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
I think also because I need to optimize for my specific scenario where the roof kind of sucks.
Exactly. Well, I'm trying to do an upgrade on my system at the moment. And it's I'm going to expand it again. And I'm getting analysis paralysis is the term, isn't it?
Overthinking everything.
Yeah, I'm just the thing is, I've got two existing non-compatible systems. What the hell do I do? Do I put in a third in a non-compatible system?
Exactly.
Or do I consolidate? Or do I, replace one of them? And Because there's no exist, because I've got two systems. I've got a Sunny Boy inverter system, but it's maxed out, right? So I've got to change the inverter that. And a company's offered me an inverter for free, right? So it's they're offering it for free, but then I'm locked in to the type of battery I can use with that, right? And then
Are you looking at battery?
Yeah, battery? I'm also looking at battery, yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But it won't type, but I'm looking at a DC battery as opposed to the Tesla one, which is an AC battery, which powers your whole house. So the battery I get would only be compatible with my string inverter system. It wouldn't be compatible with my Enphase system. So as far as the battery is concerned.
I was looking at that too, Generac versus Enphase versus Powerwall.
It's just nuts. It's just nuts.
Yeah, and the Generac stuff was not super well reviewed. There was some weird stuff about it.
Right.
Generac's one of the brands here, at least. I'm not sure. They're probably different in each place.
Yeah, Frodius, the German inverter maker, they've offered me a 6 kilowatt battery hybrid inverter for free.
Oh wow!
It's quite an expensive top of the range one, but it's only compatible with one specific brand of battery, which is the Chinese BYD ones, which are one of the best in the world, right? So there's nothing wrong there. But I'm locked into that brand. You can't use another brand, and I'm locked in to a specific model. Or two specific models in that brand. I can't even get the model that I wanted, which was the lower voltage model. It's only compatible with the higher voltage models from BYD. And it's do I take the free inverter in quote marks and then buy the more expensive and then to be tied into the more expensive limited battery solution. I don't know. It's like, I'm going to have to start doing a spreadsheet to like work it all out, which is going to be, you know, most cost effective in the end.
Are you looking at like powering your whole house off these batteries, or are you just going to do like partial?
No, it'll just be a partial thing. Although, the battery will power the whole house at night. It'll be, when you have these DC batteries, right? So it stores excess energy during the day in the battery. So during the day, if your house is using X number of kilowatts, it'll supply that. And any excess over that, it'll store in the batteries. Yeah. And then once the sun goes down.
The top up instead of going back to the grid, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then at nighttime, it pulls it back from the battery and it's as if the sun is still up, right? It's as if the sun is still there at nighttime and it pumps the energy. You can use the energy in the house. So it is a whole house solution like that, but it's not if the power fails. If the power fails, then a hybrid inverter only gives you an emergency power point backup. So then you'd have to frantically run around and plug your fridges and freezers via extension cords into your, you know, emergency power output.
Got it. Because you're saying there's no inverter on the other side of it or whatever?
Well, there is, but it doesn't power the whole house. So it won't backfeed into the whole house. It's not designed for that. It's not approved. It's not authorized. So it'll give you an emergency power and a localized power point, but it'll disconnect your house otherwise.
So everything
else is off, but you will have it. So you could actually, you know, wire in a big changeover switch to the emergency power point, you know, so that you can, you know, if the power does fail, you can even have an automatic switch. I've done a video on how those automatic switches work, those automatic transfer switches. You can wire in one of those. And if the power does fail, clunk, you know, it automatically detects and it switches over. But you've got to rewire your house for the appliances that you want to have on the backup side of things. That's where the Tesla AC batteries, they just back up your whole house, right? So you don't have to rewire your house. You don't do anything.
Right.
You just, you know, it just, your house just keeps running. So
it is interesting. So I'd heard about Span. I know someone that works at Span. And that's like a basically like a new kind of smart.
Haven't heard of them.
What's it called? Yeah, span.io is like a circuit breaker plus like a bunch of intelligence in there. And so, but one of the things is like when you are, I didn't quite understand. I thought it was just measuring like the power going out to each individual, you know, breaker you have in your house. So like, oh, well, the kitchen is drawing this much or the dishwasher is drawing this much versus the, you know, the washer dryer is doing this much, that sort of thing. And it does do that. But the other thing it does is it actually allows you to programmatically turn stuff on or off in a back power situation. So like when your battery kicks in, you basically say like, instead of hardwiring like the battery to certain breakers, then instead you can selectively, it basically just feeds back to the breaker, and then you basically say, oh, actually don't turn on the HVAC, don't turn on, you know, this part of the house, here's the things that I want to power with my limited power stuff.
I'm having a look at that now, but it's like how complicated do you want to, how complicated is a house, my entire house has two circuits, right? It's not like, you know, it's not rocket science. You know,
but yeah, it doesn't have to be if you don't want it to be, right? But like, this is definitely making it more complex.
Exactly. Like, how big and complicated does your house have to be for you to have this, which has, you know, 31 circuit breakers? This looks like a panel. This looks like the exact same panel.
End.
Yeah,
this is very high end.
This is the panel that I have down in the basement of this building that powers the entire building. Yeah, there's 32 circuit breakers on it. It's like, like, this is not for a house. This is bullshit.
This is for a house. It's for a very high end. This is targeting high end, right? I think it's targeting you know, people that have an electric car, they have a battery backup, they have, you know, they have all this, you know, a couple power walls and all that, like a couple of the photos they have.
Yeah.
And they have like, it's just a very high end house. And the panel costs $4,500 versus what is a, you know, a stamped metal panel cost, like a couple hundred bucks. Like, so like, no, this is very expensive.
Yeah. And it looks like its sole job is to like manage the power, smart manage the power to your house when the power fails. Like,
that's one of the things it does.
Like, I would use this thing, even if I installed it, I would use this thing once a decade, and then it'd only work for a couple of hours. It's like, that's how useless a product like this is to someone in my scenario, for example. Like, sure enough, maybe your power fails all the time, but like if your power fails every week, you know, if you live in a, I don't know.
And it I fails think if you live in PG&E, that's the California Power right. Company.
Yeah, it could be a.
They have like rolling back blackouts in like, you know, the Bay Area, so that's like a thing all the time. The Texas grid is having a lot of issues. You know, like there, I think this is increasing. So like the reason I started. The other reason I started going down this path, other than my neighbor's tree, is because I finished that book, The Grid, and, you know, it scared the bejesus out of me. it was like, you know, and basically one of the things they talk about is like, as more people do what you're doing, right, you are already well down this path, you know, the costs of being connected to the grid and all of the people that are backfeeding to the grid when there is excess power, right? So Dave's got increasingly up, you're at 8 now. I'm sure you'll get up to like, what, 12 kilowatts?
Yeah,
I'm sure you will definitely... You will outstrip your house's power. And like at a certain point, they're going to not allow new connections on the grid.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I think at a certain point, they're also going to penalize people that are staying on the grid because the cost, their costs are going to go up, right? It's cost a lot to maintain lines and do all that stuff.
Although in my state, I'm kind of starting to investigate this. There is a new government incentive program. The government want to use your battery storage, and you can go on these special programs where they will pay you up to 70 cents per kilowatt hour, I think it is, to use your excess battery during peak times.
Peak load.
Right? Yeah.
Like, so 5 p.m. is like peak time.
Like, because everyone comes home, they switch on all their appliances, blah, blah, you know. Right. So they will pay you, but if you export energy during a non-time, you have to pay them, like during a time that they don't want it, you have to pay them.
It sounds like a modern version of like a card you would get in Monopoly.
Right.
Like, you didn't read your solar agreement with the city. Right. Hey, $50.
Pay $50, Well, it's only 2 cents per kilowatt hour, I think, is the penalty. But technically, yes, they will. You will have to actually pay them to export energy to the grid during times they don't like it, which is
the sun comes out and all of this excess grid power comes on, and like they already have, you know, they have to then pretty much go and shut off like a power plant.
Right,
there are
it's
some
very difficult to reroute the power and do dump not it to mention, and store it, and you know,
right, like, and when Paul was on the show too, like Paul Zawada was on the show, he was talking about like the costs of doing that are very, very high. And the power quality is not that good either, right? So now you have all these people running, you know, so he mentioned like some of the reactive power is getting built into these newer inverters, but like you have low cost inverters connected to the grid. And now all these people are feeding in when the sun's really bright and it's like, you know, a hot summer day in Sydney or Durham. And it's like, the main thing that's running is big compressors on air conditioners. Like that's
right.
Like, you need that other type of power there. It's crazy. Looking forward, like I don't think we're there yet, but like, you know, solar continues to grow. I'm very happy about that. And wind continues to grow. But until the battery stuff catches up, either within people's houses or grid level storage, which is still very difficult. I think the consumer is going to get hit. And the guy I was talking to today, granted, a salesperson, he said that my local electric company, Duke Energy, just put in for a 15% rise in rates this year. Like, you know,
that's low compared to Europe.
Exactly. Because especially because they're offloading with a lot of natural gas, a lot of places, and natural gas is like spiked like crazy. Yeah.
They're shutting down their nuclear plants and their.
There's just a lot of stuff going on. And so, like, you know, and granted, I was talking to a salesperson. You always got to take that with a grain of salt, but he's talking some truth there. So. I would love to hear other people's experiences. Yep. We have a comment section. Please come shout at us and tell me some knowledge.
Anyway, paralysis analysis paralysis. It's like I don't know what to do. I'm getting to the point, I'm gonna have to do a spreadsheet to try and come out with an answer.
Do a spreadsheet, but then you gotta find like an expert in this region, in this area, and then be like, you know what, I just wanna like interview you on my blog about and you know, we could use my house as an example case. You could just tell me what to do.
Well, I'm sure if I really wanted to, I could probably, you know, get companies to give me all this stuff for free. If I really went out there and actively tried to do it. But then that's how I ended up with it's not how I ended up. Well, it's kind of sort of how I ended up with two separate systems at the moment. because, right, well, right, you know, Enphase email me and say, hey, do you want to, you know, do you want some bloody Enphase microinverters and LG Conta? Hey, do you want some new panels? Hey, let's tee up with Enphase and here you go. You just have to pay for installation. Yeah. And yeah, great. But now I've got like two separate systems and it's a pain in the ass. Well, it's a pain in the ass if I want to if I want to add battery storage or I want to expand it. Yeah, it's like, right, what the hell do
it's
I do?
It's not like, you know, as designed. It's like
mine is definitely totally not typical, right, you know, so, yeah, and that's kind of a problem. So I don't
know.
Yep. And then the throw into the mix, we're maybe this year, don't know, because there's a construction crisis here in Australia at the moment.
Sure.
But we do have plans approved to expand the house, as in expand upwards, yep, right? Yep, we're putting an extension on the house upwards. You're that means all of our existing panels have to come down. So what the hell do we do? And it takes 6 to 9 months to build, you know.
Sure.
Like, sure. So I don't know, do we go without solar for 6 to 9 months and we just store the panels and the and stuff? Or do we move them temporarily onto the house? And how does that tie into my expansion system that I want to add? And like, oh, God.
Maybe put them in a tree, you know, like a solar tree.
It's painful. It's just, yep.
Yeah. What if what if your boss that makes you work holidays, what if he lays you off? And then,
I'm screwed. Well, it's not a problem if you're working in the working online, really. Nice. I mean, if you've got 10 full-time jobs going, that was a beautiful segue. I know. You can compliment
nice
me
catch
now.
Nice catch.
I mean,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, set up the bike.
Here it is. Anyway,
okay.
Hacker News. I just retweeted this today. I take it with a grain of salt, right? Whether or not this person is, you know, actually telling the truth or not. But this is actually from eight months ago. They currently have. Oh, I'll read it out. I currently have 10 fully remote engineering jobs. The bar is so low, oversight is non-existent, and everyone is so forgiving for underperformance, I can coast about 4 to 8 weeks before a given job fires me. I'm currently on $1.5 million run rate for compensation this year, and the interviewing process is so much faster today. Companies are desperate. It takes me 2 to 3 hours of total effort to land a new job with thousands to choose from. Like,
and this is the problem with software companies. So that was posted 8 months ago, right? I think we maybe brought that up very briefly on here, but like,
okay, but let's, you know, like
pandemic
let's
companies just, yeah, were desperate, right? Like absolutely
right,
desperate,
right,
like he mentions. And remote hiring is tough, and so yeah, I could see this potentially working. This sounds exhausting to me, even if you are making $1.5 million.
Yeah,
a year,
but if you're brazen enough to do it, I can totally see it working. Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
right,
like
right.
How
you just don't show
the,
up for any meeting, and
how would
you're always on mute.
Know that you're, you know, and I
right.
had,
well,
like,
eventually you don't actually
know
write any code, but
and then you don't write. You just bum around. You're Wally in Dilbert.
Right.
You are Wally.
Yeah, that's
right.
Right.
You are
right,
Wally.
Right.
If you don't know,
now you're doing
if
that.
You don't
on
know,
a Slack.
Everyone knows Dilbert, right?
Right?
Yeah. But you are Wally. Wally is the character in Dilbert who basically just
worthless
carries around
he's
a coffee
worthless
cup and he doesn't do anything, yeah, right? He doesn't, yeah, you know, he goes out of his way to do nothing, right? It's
that's
like,
right, yeah,
yeah, it's yeah great.
And I think, so the reason this came up again is because all these layoffs are happening now in tech.
Yep.
It's interesting, like, so, you know, so the big names are like Google, Facebook, Amazon, everybody, you know, Microsoft is laying off for the first time in a long time. It's interesting, I haven't heard too much on the hardware side of things, but maybe that's also happening. I think it's just because a lot of these digital companies,
isn't it,
got overextended. Well,
which like these software companies have hardware divisions as well, so, you know.
Yeah, right. But I haven't heard, like, so even though like Meta is, which is Facebook, is doing poorly before this, you know, before this time, like I haven't heard them be like, oh, we're cutting the entire hardware group. We're not like they're not dumping the metaverse yet and all the hardware that they're building. They probably should, but they're not.
Right.
You know, so. so yeah, I don't know. I think it's have you ever been part of a big layoff like that? Like,
twice.
Really?
Twice.
Oh,
yeah, but well, Altium, of course. Altium,
oh, right,
you know, sacked
that,
half
that's
half
what brought
the company.
Us the EV vlog that we know and love today.
Yeah,
right?
It did. It's when I went full time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
right,
you know, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just laid off half the company. They, you know, it was pretty non discriminatory. It was like it was across the board.
Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Yeah. It was every department. So yeah, and they only got like we had four people in our hardware group, right? There was only four of us. And basically, yeah, they laid off three of us. So it was, you know, there was only one left in the end. And in the end, I don't think he lasted them another 6 months or 9 months or something. And then, you know, they totally got rid of the hardware because they knew the hardware was, you know, like just a stupid thing for
a company. It's expensive too. I mean, it's hard. It's really expensive to build hardware, right?
Yep.
So and long timelines, all that stuff. And
And it just, you know, it didn't fit in with, you know, the company had to get back to profit, right? And there was new management, right, came in and they just went, no, look, you know, we've been bleeding cash for a decade now. No, stop it. And this hardware is not helping. So, you know, hardware has to go. Right. I think it lasted 6 months, maybe 12 months, and then it was gone.
Yeah.
Like, you know. Yep. So yeah, Altium don't do hardware, as far as I'm aware.
Yep. You know, now that I think of it, I have been part of layoffs too. Like I kind of put it out of mind, but I have been part of layoffs.
Yeah.
I haven't been personally laid off. I suppose that's the big thing, but there was definitely things happening at the time. Like Hologram got rid of their hardware and I was basically pushed into the marketing group, which was no fun. But I was at Keithley during layoffs, which were just like during the recession, the Great Recession.
Right. Okay. So was that like one person from every department or was it like a percentage?
Yeah,
from each?
It was probably like 10 to 20% of the company got laid off.
Okay. Yeah. Right. But it was basically across every department fairly equally, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right, exactly. Right. There wasn't they did shut down one division as well, but that ended up coming back a couple of years later. It was interesting.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I was involved in another one, which was KeyCorp back in 1994, I think that was. Uh-huh. And that was, they sacked a third of the company overnight.
Wow. Wow.
At least a third. And that was, once again, I think that was across the board. So, yeah.
How does it work in Australia? Is it like you guys get like automatic severance or how does that, or like unemployment?
Yes, you automate. Yeah, every full-time employee gets, you'll get 4 weeks. It depends on how long you've been at the company. There's
it's like codified for the country.
It is codified. That is your response. You legally take on that responsibility if you hire a full-time employee. Yes.
Got it.
You have to give them, if you make them
like 4 weeks for every year you're there or
4 something.
4 weeks like
for
that.
Every year or something. Oh, I can't remember
something
the exact
like
figure.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is codified into law. It is different if they quit. So that's
That's why you try and get, that's why you pull a Wally and try and get fired.
That's it. You try and get made redundant. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. No. Well, there's a difference between getting fired and a genuine retrenchment due to the company just has to cut staff. You know, that they
are
different.
What are the different
things.
Terms here? You were saying different things. You're saying redundant, retrenchment, and
redundancy and retrenchment are basically the same thing. It's a different words for the same thing.
It means
the company just has to cut staff and it isn't anything personal. Like it's not something that you personally did.
Got
to
it.
Get
okay.
like, you know,
right. so
yeah.
Yeah. They say that like, with cause, without cause.
And, well, know, so exactly. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
So it's with, without cause basically, but with cause as in you're fired, like you're an asshole, you're fired, you screwed up, you're fired kind of thing. No, you don't
right,
get
it. Right. But then the onus on them to actually prove it and that sort of thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yes. You can take them to court and all that. Sort of jazz. Yeah. But then, even then, you still have to pay them out their holiday pay. You've got to pay them. I think it might even be 2 weeks or something. There is laws there as well. So,
Got it.
Yep.
Yeah, not so much in the US. Not so much.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah, it's fairly generous here. And if you work for the government, it's even more generous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So.
Yeah. Well, it's, it's interesting because it's like, you know, I'm reading a lot of different takes on this and Google especially. And it is like a lot of the people that are being let go are like super senior as well. And I just wonder about getting hired again as a super senior person, you know, we might see some influx of consultants out in the world, right?
right. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Well, all the best.
Yep. So I wonder if this guy's been... So how many has he been laid off from how many jobs?
Oh, yeah.
You know, from his 10 fully remote engine.
The like, 10 fully remotes.
Yeah. But I can totally see this as, you know, working. If you've got the gall to do it and you've got the hours to, you know, as in, like, you don't have to work, but you at least have to, like, you know, make the appearance that you're working.
You got to show up at meetings, right?
You know, you got to make the appearance, you know.
Anything with, like, FaceTime, I think that's where it really starts to
yep.
to get you. You know?
And with ChatGPT now, you can cut some code. You know, you can at least make an attempt to cut some code to make it look like you're doing something. So,
That's why hardware is better. How are you going to fake hardware? ChatGPT ain't got nothing on us yet.
Well, you can, I don't know. Look, I updated the Gantt chart this week. Like me working on projects, I don't know what it's been like for you, but I've worked at companies where, you know, nobody comes to check. It's like, oh, just show us the Gantt chart and where how much progress you made. And they'd basically take your word for it. Like you wouldn't have to show them hardware. Okay, like you wouldn't, you know. It was like, okay, because it's on the Gantt chart for 2 months' time. Okay, you've got 2 months' leeway to do nothing if you really wanted to.
Mm.
Like actually before they find out, you know, like they go, hey, where's the hardware? And you go, sorry. Yeah.
I heard an apocryphal story about a U.S. patent examiner that I used to go to school with where he would do, you know, so they only have quarterly check-ins basically, so every 3 months. And basically he would do absolutely nothing for 2 months and like 20 days. And then the last week and a half of the month, he would just stay up all, he would basically like drink as much coffee as he could and stay up all night and go through patent applications until he's done with the work, and then he kept his job.
Wow.
It's like,
wow.
Yeah, that is not a great system. So when you're thinking, oh, wow, I'm so proud of my patent, it might have been this guy just, you know, trying to get his stuff out the door, you know?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Anyway, it looks possible. So, although, isn't the trend, like the trend is going back to working at the office now? It's like,
maybe. Yeah, that is a lot of places.
I don't know. I'm not going to say Tesla started it, but that was like Tesla and Twitter started it. But that was like, you know, that was like the cover that other companies needed. Like, hey, if Elon Musk is doing it, like we can sort of get away with
too. It's always, it's been chipping away at it. But Mr. Musk was very, very upfront about it.
Yep. But I've noted that other companies are suddenly actually jumped out of the woodwork and said, hey, yeah, we want you back in now. It's like, yep.
You know, so I'm an all remote company. The benefits. Yes.
Yeah, because you aren't even in the same state as where your company headquarters.
That's right. There's no one in my state that I work with. And it works on a lot of levels, it works.
Right.
But as a, you know, as an individual, as a somewhat social engineer.
Yes, you're one of those rare social engineers.
One of the weirdos.
Yeah.
One of the weirdos. You know, and really just high bandwidth type stuff, right? Like you can really get a lot done when you're kind of like hunkered down together. Yeah. And I miss that sometimes. You know, I still get a lot done. We all get a lot done, right? But it's I just miss the camaraderie, I think is the main thing. But I think the hard thing is like, you know, a lot of companies are increasingly trying to go like hybrid. And I think that is not the option because they're still, you know, despite 3 years of pandemic and despite all of the hardware in the world, nobody has fixed the conference room problem. And it is so painful.
It still sucks.
Especially being the one person out, to be like the one person that's like left out. It's like you're second class at that point. And so it's like, I think all remote or all in person, you know, maybe having multiple offices.
Just imagine, like, if you're in a, you know, if you're in a meeting and there's supposed to be 10 people in the meeting and 9 of them are physically there and you're the only one who's actually remote, it's like you may as well not even be there.
I think that's right. You're basically, or just get a recording after the fact. You know, like, they might stop and pause otherwise. And, you know, at past companies.
Otherwise, they're not going to put it, you know, how much time and effort is spent at the start of the meeting just getting the bloody system working and making sure you're there? And if are they going to do that for one person? If 9 others are in the room, they're just going to go, who cares about Joe Blogs? We just won't bother. His system doesn't work. You know, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, we have a quorum, you know.
Yeah. I think it's just tough. And like I said, I'm really surprised that we didn't see any kind of like technological improvement there. Not like I expect holograms or anything, but just any kind of like better presence has not taken off. My thing is Dave and I do audio, and I think conference room audio is like, so like when people sign up for the show and they're like, I'm going to like dial in from a conference room. It's like an all glass conference room. Ugh. I'm like, you are not coming on the show.
No, exactly.
We will not have you here if you are in that conference. It's so tough because it's sounds bouncing off the wall. You're far away from the microphone.
Even though it's supposed to be a properly set up, you know, that's like, we've got a conference with all the latest whiz bang tech. And it sounds like shit.
Exactly. It's starting from the worst place. And like, yeah. You know, and they have PhDs doing all this echo cancellation, but it's just you're fighting physics from day from the jump.
Yep.
And so like, I'm just always surprised. My idea for this sort of like solution was always, you know, like when Griff in Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
Here's a deep cut. You know, when he has, when he pulls out the hoverboard and then the other folks pull like the tow lines off
he
of that.
He has the powered one. Yeah.
He has the power one and they all pull the tow lines off of it. I always thought, like, why not just put lapel mics off these drag lines and then have everybody have a lapel mic right in front of, like, on their shirt or whatever.
Right.
And then everybody has a perfect microphone, like, right there, right next to
them.
You know?
Yep.
And it's never happened. So if I ever start a startup, Dave, that's the one. That's the, I'm going to start a...
Right. Yeah, yeah. I would have, right? Tell me, I'm going to search for this after this, I think, see if it exists, right? Yeah. You know how the conference things are usually like a box that sits in the center of the table.
Yeah, it's always in the center.
Yep. Yeah, and it's always in the center, right? Why can't that box have like 10
mics?
10 little, you've seen that Rode? You know, the Rode Go mic, the one that actually...
Oh, I was like, the yellow brick road?
No, the Rode, right. Yes, the the Australian company, Rode, right? And, got that little wireless transmitter.
Those things are amazing.
Like, there's no cable, right? They're great. I've got them, right? And why can't you have like 10 of those little things that have an internal battery and they've even got an into latest it's one
sitting
even
on
has
a recharger
internal
plan,
and see them in a reach so that little thing in the middle has 10 pockets for the recharges.
Perfect.
And when you walk into the room, you pick it up, you clip it on, done.
Perfect.
It automatically pairs, and then when you're done, you put it back, it recharges, boom.
Perfect. Yeah. And then the other thing you need to have is when it goes out, when you forget to take it off at the end of the meeting, it needs to alarm when you leave the room.
Yes,
so
it's
far enough away from
the base. It needs to start beeping. Yes, if you go out of range, because I've done that when I'm interviewing people, I'm on site or whatever, then I totally forgot my wireless mic's still attached.
Oh, that's going
to
happen. You know. That would be the main error. That would be the main error that happened. Yeah, no, I think that's I had a similar thought with the the wireless to wired. You know that's a natural jump. Yeah. So
why doesn't that product exist?
Go forth and make this company. I would just love to have that in a conference room. Conference rooms suck. I hate conference rooms.
Yes, totally. Yep.
All right, Dave. We're on the same wavelength here.
Absolutely. That's a winning idea. Right. That's
It is.
Well, let's do a pitch deck and let's go get.
Oh no!
Let's go get funding for this.
No.
Come on.
I don't think so.
Come
on.
No. Why are you
the last innovation? No, I just I'm already at a startup and also it would be a really remote startup. You know, I don't want to work that far away with a coworker.
Yeah, but there's a guy that works for 10.
No
there's guys that works for 10 things at once. Come on, surely you can. I can understand not wanting to work with me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. You know, totally.
Who's going to write the software? Two guys arguing about hardware. Like, you write the software. You write the software.
Yeah, we're both equally shit at it.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting a little better.
You're slightly better, I would sort of.
I'm doing some more.
Back your skills.
Really starting,
a bit more. Yeah.
Starting from a good template is really important for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know where there's been no technological progress.
Where's that, Dave?
The Parkes Radio Telescope here in Australia.
That's right. 1965, I think, was when it was first installed. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And what is still running there today?
A PDP-11. A PDP-11 mainframe is still driving that dish to this day.
That's right.
It's great. They just, anyway,
amazing.
Tom Scott has done a tour. I didn't even know he was in the country, but his latest video is he got to ride the dish. Oh, not jealous at all.
We should say, so this is not the telescope that we went to. This is the one that's actually,
this is
the one that replaced the one in the dish, or this is the dish?
No, this is the dish, as
this
in the movie. Movie recommendation of the week, folks, the dish.
Yeah,
I'm sure
one.
We've recommended it before, but you've seen it because
I have. Yep,
yeah.
Yep,
yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's hilarious. Yeah. And it's got it's basically how the dish received the Apollo 11 moonwalking video.
Yep.
Although that was Honeysuckle Creek technically, but then it switched to Parkes. But let's just not go into the details there.
I mean,
but,
for the
yep.
For the movie, yep. It's movie magic at that point.
I have actually been to, and you've been to that facility where that is the original Apollo 11 moon receiving dish is. They moved it from Honeysuckle Creek to the deep to the Canberra Deep Space Tracking Complex. They did moved it in the 90s, and it's still there, but it's actually decommissioned now. But it is the dish that received the one small step for man, one giant leap video. So,
yep.
And in the museum there, they've got the switch. They've actually I've got a tour of the thing there, and you can see it in one of my videos somewhere. They've got switch because the camera was mounted upside down. The camera on the limb was mounted upside down. So they had to have this switch and some dedicated circuitry to actually invert the video image. they had to.
You want to talk about a bad conference call, that long distance call from the moon. Oh, boy. So grainy.
But anyway, it's a cool little, it's a cool complex. We've been there. It's great. Yeah. But I've been to the dish, but I have a video on my second channel. I had a little small compact camera with me. I did get a full transition of the dish moving. So if you search my channel, there's a great video of a time lapse of the dish doing a full rotation over.
Tom got to ride it actually, like, because there's stairs. Because it actually almost touches the ground.
It practically touches the ground. Yeah, the dish is that huge that it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah, I want to ride the dish. I want to. Bloody Tom Scott got to do it. The bastard.
I know.
Yeah, I've been talking about it for years. Oh yeah, I should email them and say, hey, next time you have a maintenance day, can I come and ride the dish? Yeah. Although they probably get a million people,
Sure.
Wanting to do it. Yep. Mm. Anyway, I'm jealous. Anyway, they've still got a PDP 11 running, and the guy there who Tom interviewed, he said, why didn't you change it? Why haven't you modernized it? Well, still works.
That's right.
It's got dials and everything, and it's there's just a control program. Why
they've definitely added stuff since the PDP 11 though. Like, modern drivers
all
and stuff,
modern receivers and stuff like that, of course. Exactly. But the actual drive for the motors and everything stuff. Else, and the control loop to do it all and everything. Yeah, it's all in software. It all runs on PDP 11. It's great.
It's great. It's awesome. Yeah. Big changes coming in the tiny world, not the huge dish world, but in the tiny world of, I guess big company, small stuff. Apple is ditching Broadcom and Qualcomm. I think this is a trend we're going to see more and more. So we had Matthew Venn on the show last week, and we were talking about RISC-V and custom silicon generally. But I think more and more companies are going to bring chip design in house just because it's so much more accessible, and the IP. They're still going to buy some IP, I'm sure, but necessarily going to Broadcom and Qualcomm directly.
What chips are they currently using? Like 5G, 4G, like RF?
Yeah, I think a lot of the RF stuff and the cell stuff.
Yep.
And Apple had bought PA Semi a couple years ago.
Right.
But I think what's going to happen is you think about the value add on top of an ARM processor that a Qualcomm and a Broadcom's doing, right? They're doing these huge ASICs that have IP from ARM, right? That's in there. Mm. And there's a lot of stuff surrounding that centralized IP. But I think Apple's just basically gobbling up more of that capability. Mm. So they keep buying smaller companies and they want to put their own stuff in there. They want to maintain secrecy, I'm sure. Yeah, I just think that both with going direct to ARM for really big people that are going to stay in the ARM ecosystem, and then also RISC-V, I think we're going to see more of this.
What processor is inside a Broadcom and Qualcomm chips? Because they don't. It's not like they're just analog. I don't think there's got to be processing in there.
I think the Snapdragon is like a ARM A45, A8000, there's just tons of huge ARM stuff in there, like multi core. What was it, like the 880, the Snapdragon 880? Snapdragon.
So Apple ditched ARM for their M1, their in-house M1 processor.
Right. And M2 just came out.
And yet they're still using ARM because they're in Broadcom and Qualcomm chips that they were using. So,
right. Well, there's still ARM. The M1 is ARM, though. That's the thing. And you look at M1 and M2, it's still ARM IP, and it still compiles with ARM compilers, right? But it's just not external. It's not using other people's design chipsets. So
right.
Yep. So I don't know what's actually, I don't actually know what's in the, I guess the custom stuff is in the iPhone too now. I don't follow.
I don't know. I don't follow these fruity gadgets.
But I know a lot of like, it's so like a lot of the Android phones are Snapdragon.
Yes.
And those are, you know, huge ARM things as well, right? They have big video processing. They have all of the RF stuff in there too. So yeah, they're just way beyond my comprehension, but it'll be interesting to see how this stuff changes the industry, I suppose.
Meh. I don't think yeah, it's not going to change Apple. It's
our
a meh.
Design, but right. Yeah. It's just, I think it's just big players doing big moves like that. Right. And I think it could change the landscape in terms of other people being willing, you know, and also like if it hits Qualcomm's bottom line, it might change how they market their stuff to other people. Right. You think about like it's impossible to, you know, to access some of their parts as a small player, but if they lose some of their big players, then they have to start targeting the smaller market as well. So it might change how they operate as well. So it could have some impacts on the industry at some point.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay.
Yeah. How is your, how's your chip design stuff going? So, you know, I owe you $100 in chips.
$100 in chips. I still have not decided which one I'm going to go for. But we'll see. I just did the video on the 10 cent.
I saw that. That was a fantastic video. Yep. Good. Glad you got it to Blinky. And
yes.
I think the other thing that was in that video, I think I linked it last time when we talked about it, but because it came out between when we recorded and when I posted. Okay. So I did link it in. So you're welcome for all that traffic, you know, all those links from the Ant Bar. yeah.
Thank you.
But the thing I liked about that video was your focus on just like the, I wish someone would have sat me down, not saying you sat me down on this, but I wish someone would have sat me down on like the examples code.
Yep.
Like that is just such an important thing when you're getting into new microcontrollers, and like each sample is like just a dedicated piece. One thing I've talked to Alicia and Chris about from Embedded FM is just like, I feel like there's not enough. I think I've said this when I was on their show before, but like one skill set is being able to like glue that stuff together and being good at like making SDKs from different companies and samples that come in a lot of these SDKs and example like IDEs and stuff like that. And being able to glue that stuff together in a cogent way that is like testable and is updatable and maintainable. And, you know, that's a skill I would have gotten earlier in my career, both to actually go and read and like really dig into those samples, but then also like have the skills to pull out the important nuggets and build my own program with them.
Yeah. Well, that's how I do my software development, especially if I'm coming up on a new platform or I'm using a new feature. I just pull in an example code for that peripheral that I want. You know, if I want to learn how to use the analog to digital converter in a micro, just pull in the example, and it's, you know, it shows me how to set up the registers. That at least gets me in the ballpark, and then I can write. I can get some compilable code that's actually reading a value out, but it might be gibberish because it's, you know, it's got the wrong channel, or it's got the, you know, the wrong settings, got the wrong, you know, something or other. But at least I'm getting something out, and then I can drive into the data sheet and see the actual register values that I actually want, then substitute those back in, and then boom, you know.
Yeah, you're at least a good starting point. Yeah, and if you're maybe handing it off to someone else, or you're at least able to test things. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I just feel like early in my career, I was just like, oh, every program starts from a blank page. And that is completely wrong. That is,
I think it's increasingly the worst way to do it. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think increasingly wrong with a lot of RTOSes that I do now, right? It's like there's so much complexity that you're building on top of that if you think you're starting from a blank page, even a blank example project where maybe you have like just free RTOS setup, you're screwed, you know.
Exactly.
Like, you can do it, and like I'm sure that the pros, the very pro risk, you know, firmware engineers want to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, of course.
Like, man, course. Me, I'm screwed. So
that's why I was so impressed when, you know, I loaded that package in and I saw the examples and I went, oh, they've got an example for every one of the peripherals in this chip.
That's exactly what you want. Yep.
That's exactly what you want. No more, no less. You know, like that's it. Done. Right. It's everything I need. I am going to use your chip now because, you know, you gave me these examples.
I think that's like table stakes, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And then you optimize later.
Right.
Premature optimization is an enemy.
But yeah, anyway, it may be the risk, it may be something else. We'll see.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Cool.
And anyway, a lot of people said they want to see me do RISC V assembly. So maybe.
Interesting.
Maybe I'll do that because they wanted to see how fast the pin could toggle, right? And I was using the library, right? I was using the pin, like I was using the toggle library. I haven't looked at the source code for the actual, you know, when you call up, you know, what is it, write bit or something to a port, mm-hmm. you know, I haven't looked at the source code of how it does that, but it's obviously more than a couple of instructions, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's got to be bit loaded and all, you know, all sorts of things. And so that takes time. So if you're trying to toggle a bit as fast as possible and you're calling up the standard write bit, you know, write port one, you know, bit one or whatever, then, mm-hmm. you know, that's yeah. using more instructions than what you would if you hard coded it yourself in either assembly or like some other direct. It doesn't have to be an assembly, but it needs to be mm-hmm. Compiled down to a single instruction that writes to that register, you know. So people wanted to see how fast it could pin toggle because using the regular C library with a 24 meg processor clock, it only toggled at just under 1 meg. So, you know, that wasn't exactly a fast pin toggle. So everyone wanted to know, well, how fast is it? Can you do it if you used assembly? So that'd be an interesting video. And based on the number of bloody views I got, I think I'll milk that cash cow.
I think, I am drawn personally to cheap parts. Like the most you can do with cheap parts, it's always gonna do well because it's like accessible too, right?
Well, I have not failed with one of my cheap parts videos. You know, all my cheap parts, or you know, cheap tools, cheap workbench, cheap.
Why chip
you
of the know, week? Test equipment. Chip of the week is always the. I guess we don't really do cheap chip of the week, but that's probably a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. No, people just love cheap shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
Well, I think it gets the maximum. You know, like you know, a very well off person can still use it, right? So it just gets your maximum audience, I think.
Oh yeah, no, totally. Well, a well off person might be looking to develop a you know, million of some widget where, yeah, price matters, right? So they care that it's a 10-cent micro instead of a 30-cent micro, you know?
Yeah.
So it sort of like matters to everyone. So, yeah, that's why it's hugely popular. Yep. Which wasn't a surprise. I would have been incredibly disappointed and I would have been asking questions if that video hadn't have gotten a lot of views. You know, I would have investigated and gone, well, what have I done wrong? Is it my presentation? Is it my thumbnail? Is it my description? Is it like, you know, because I knew people like cheap stuff like this and it does bring in the views. So, a new channel idea.
Just cheap stuff.
Just cheap stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of the.
EV cheap, coming soon.
Yeah, EV cheap. That you could also do just like AliExpress finds.
AliExpress finds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's big Clive's territory. You know, he just buys these, you know, 50-cent things on there and, you know, he's making a killing out of it. So, Oh, boy. Yeah. Anyway, last digs because our amp hour's up.
Our amp hour is up. Anything else on the list? Once again, thanks to Unmanaged 615 for populating this list.
Posting everything. Going mad.
It would be a ghost. It would be a ghost town.
It would be a ghost town if it wasn't for Unmanaged 615.
Yeah.
Who was totally not a bot. No,
if it was a bot. If it's like a good bot. You know,
if it's a good bot, we're very happy.
Yeah.
What is it with Ferris Bueller's synthesizer? That got lots of votes up. I'm a huge Ferris fan. Say Ferris.
Yeah.
Say Ferris. Did somebody made one, or has somebody used? Somebody got the actual one. That's That looks like they reviewed the one that was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, Emu Systems Emulator. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've watched Ferris Bueller, but I never like got into the mythology of it. Yeah.
No, that's just wrong. It's just wrong.
I lived in Chicago. How about that?
Okay. Well, there you go. It should be like your favorite movie then.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Abe Froman, the Sausage King of
Chicago. Yeah, Sausage King of Chicago. See, you can recite lines. You're doing pretty well.
I'm pretty good at that stuff. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, so there's no tear down there. That's a shame. It's just got a review of it. but that's cool.
What about the self-soldering circuits? Do you see that one?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people wanted my comments on this. And yeah. I went, yeah, it's cool, but that's like great. Totally pointless, you know.
No, like, it's meant to be pointless. That's the fun part.
Yeah, I know. And that's the fun part about it is that it's just so stupid that it's, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, that's
it's great.
Yeah, I don't think you'd ever use it for...
No, I think it was good
because it kind of showed like the importance of like thermal planes and the ability to pass power through stuff. And it's like the idea of like self-replicating as well. Yep. That's interesting.
For those playing along at home who don't know what we're talking about, which is probably most of you, it's... sorry, I don't know who actually did it.
Carl Bugeja.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, he made a PCB with a heating element on the inner layers, right?
That's right.
Which a heating element, of course, is just a trace, right? It's just a copper trace. Yeah, so he did like a zigzag copper trace, like a heating element inside.
Yep.
And he bought those out to tabs, you know, big sort of like, you know, big clamp tabs on the side of the board.
Yeah.
That you hook up a high current power supply.
It's not like he just did it willy-nilly. He also calculated what the resistance would be and what he would need to heat it up to and whatever, and made it safe for... So he didn't delaminate the board. Mentioned that a couple times.
Yep.
You use low temp solder. I think you, what was it?
But there was no thermal feedback, right? There was no temperature control feedback, right? It was just
Yeah, because he uses one board to build another board then, and then the one board has a control, a PID loop to control.
Oh, okay. Right.
Soldering the next board. That was clever.
That's good. And it basically the board heats up from the inside and it solders itself. Right. Yeah, so you don't need an external thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Carl has, if people probably have seen his stuff, he does a lot of like PCB motors. That's like one of his common things.
Yeah, right. Yes, they're very cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really cool thing.
Yep.
And he's done a couple talks about it. He has a great YouTube channel. So definitely check it out. I feel like this is like a kind of like a one off thing he started doing and it just became a bigger thing. So it's great.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely terrific, but it's absolutely non functional.
Oh yeah, like you would never ever do this in a product.
You would never do this in a product.
Where would you put a heating? I don't think you'd do it for soldering though. You would maybe do it just for like if you were in space and you needed to keep your board warm.
Oh yes,
you
know, you're totally
heaters
would.
On
yes.
the
there would be some
on the copter
weird,
that's on yeah, Mars, yeah. right?
Yes.
Doesn't that have a heater?
Yes, but usually that's inside the enclosure. They would heat up the enclosure because you want to heat up the parts as well. You know, like
that's true.
So you know,
yeah. Yeah, you don't want to delaminate or desolder the parts either.
No, and it's a very inefficient way to do it as well. If you're trying to heat up the components which are on top of the board, you don't want to be heating inside the board and then cover your heater with thermal insulating material, fiberglass.
Well, it would have a different curve.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it is a very poor way to do it, but it's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, there might be some niche up.
Yeah, I'm guessing NASA doesn't do that, but there are reasons to have heaters like that, and heating elements at least inside of.
Well, you can embed cooling elements inside your PCB. There's high end PCBs. You go to the high end PCB suppliers; they can route water cooling channels inside your PCB.
Yeah,
okay,
that's nice.
Like that's really schmick, right? Yeah. That's like, don't ask the price. Like you're not going
to
get that
to
on your $5 shared panel. Okay,
that's right,
you
that's
just
right.
know.
See, that's the next thing people could do is like maybe you could take two JLC boards and you can just like you know make your own channel. You know,
yes. You could. You can actually, you can do control depth routing, and then you could, you could get three of them. So you could have one.
There you
get routed slots.
I was thinking like
and then you
a
get
3D
top and
printed
bottom,
inner thing. Right.
Then you actually glue them together. No, you don't have to 3D print it when you can get the PCB maker to make it. So you can get the inner one does all your channel routing, and then the outer one is just a fixed board on the top and bottom, and you glue them together.
I'm hearing a video idea here, Dave. You know, you should.
Totally.
This is like, you know, fire and ice.
Just,
you could play off.
Yeah,
the
I thought
video.
About. I've always thought about doing like a video series on like obscure things you can do with PCBs.
Yeah,
like I've done, like turning them into front panels. You know, like I've.
Oh yeah,
you know,
I did that recently. Like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
It's tough to not have vias
like this. Heating up thing is one of them, you know, and you can add cooling channels, and you can. In fact, I just Twitter the other day, somebody was trying to embed a coin cell in a PCB, and they came up with and they came up with this. So you do read Twitter. There you go. And
it was on Hackaday, you butt.
Oh, was it? Okay, right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I responded to him on Twitter. I said, yeah, you won't get this on a shared panel because it's got to use a really thin routing bit and stuff like that. Right. So he was trying to embed it. And so there's lots of ways, you know, you can embed, you can do control depth routing, or you can do several very thin boards and then you can actually glue them together. And that's another way to do niche products. If you're doing fit to envelope product design, you know, like you're doing a smartwatch or something, you know, you've got to do like, you know, weird things with boards to try and get things to fit in there. Yeah. And you embed components into the board and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
I think I told you I've been taking language classes.
Yes.
And did you know that another way to say weird in a different language is expensive as hell?
Right. Yes. Part of my French.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Yeah. No. If you're thinking about these things, be ready to pull out the wallet. Yeah.
Well, it's actually not that expensive. See, if you did that three-layer method I was telling you about, or even two-layer, like you do not go to the manufacturer and go, I would like control depth routing, please. Because then your price goes up 100-fold.
That's right.
If you go, like
you don't go to a baker and say, I want a wedding cake. You say, I want a cake.
Yeah, you want a cake. Exactly. Yeah. And then, but you go to the cheap manufacturer and you go, I would like two PCBs. PCBs, please.
Not on the same panel either.
Yeah, but yes, but make them thin, make them 0.8 millimeters, so then you can glue them together, and you got your 1.6 millimeter standard thickness board. But you can add, but then you've got your control depth, right? Yeah. So it's like, you know, you can put batteries in there, components.
Hey Dave, guess what? I will bet you $100 in parts that you can't make this happen. That's a double or nothing bet right there.
All right. You want to see it happen, don't you? All right.
Yeah.
All right. I'll have to think. Yeah, because you got to, like, I can't just do it and mention you.
We
can
need
do
a date.
It. I've got to come up with
a date.
Oh God. Don't put pressure on. I'm already behind on like six different videos I've got
to
do.
You don't have to take this bet. I'm just saying that's the bet. I'd say we give it the same amount of time as we did to the. So when did we say the Twitter thing would happen? So we said it would be done on the 15th. Obviously, it was not. I was wrong there.
Yeah, but I've got to get boards made and shit.
This isn't my problem. I'll give you an extra 2 weeks.
Extra 2 weeks.
When was it? Did we talk about it on Kaisermas? When did we make
God,
that bet?
I don't know.
No, it must have been
after Kaisermas. No, it wasn't on Kaisermas. No. No, it was before.
No. Kaisermas was the last of the year. Okay, so then it was you got plenty of time. It was the one before Kaisermas. Right. So that was like, we recorded that on the 8th of December. So you basically get a month and a week. You get 5 weeks. You could totally get PCBs back in 5 weeks.
Yeah, but I've got like, I can't just do it. You know, I've got a plan.
No bet.
Otherwise, it's good putting too much pressure on me.
He's just going to rest on his laurels and take the
$100. Yeah, I know. I'm going to take shit apart and open mail.
Yeah, I think we should keep these bet things going. We should take these bet things going, you know?
Yep. It kind of makes things happen or not happen in the case of Twitter.
Yeah. That's right. I was thinking about doing double or nothing for another 5 weeks from now.
How would you like to win your money back?
Yeah, right.
In that, I bet you're not on Mastodon in 12 months' time. I bet you're back on Twitter.
Ooh, that's an interesting thing.
Mastodon's going to die in the ass.
Okay, well, you know, that one.
There'll be niche groups there, you know, but.
You know. That's pretty easy for me to do. I just have to tweet on. You know, one year from now, and one year from now, and I win. So,
yeah, that's
I say no bet on that one.
Yep,
no, that's not a good bet for you.
Fair call. Yep.
Anyway.
All right. I will.
You think about it.
I will endeavor to do my best.
It'll
go on my official glass whiteboard list here. I have a list of stuff on my glass whiteboard here.
So that is. That sounds like that's pretty involved. So that's a lot of planning.
Yeah, but I've got to come up with something cool. And I probably, you know, and once again, I'd probably want to do several examples in one video where I shouldn't. I should just do one and turn it into a series. Like, here's video of how to do this clever thing with PCBs. Here's another and do a whole series. Totally. All right.
Especially just for the bet, you know.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to at least come up with a list, whether or not I do it. I'll come up with a list of ideas for videos I can do, whether or not I actually get off my ass and do it. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Another thing.
The first step is making a list.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Good luck, buddy.
Catch you next time.